This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. WVXU listeners who enjoy travel or just like to learn about fascinating travel destinations, tune in each Saturday afternoon at 2 to hear Rick Steves as he and his guests provide insights and suggestions on interesting places and the best ways to experience them. And this afternoon, guidebook author and travel expert Rick Steves joins us to share his latest travel tips. You can join the conversation, 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Rick, good afternoon. Good to talk to you.
Thanks. Good to be with you.
Rick, how long have you been doing your travel show?
Oh, I've been doing my travel show on radio for 10 years now and on TV for 25 years. And I wrote my first guidebook back in 1980. So
wow.
I've been at this for a while, still having a lot of fun.
And you've probably been traveling for a lot longer than that, if not longer. What got you hooked on being
a
world traveler?
Oh, I remember when I was 14 years old, my dad, who was a piano tuner, started to import pianos from Germany. And he said, "Son, we're going to Germany to visit the piano factories." And I thought, "Dad, that's a stupid idea. I didn't want to go." And he dragged me over to Europe. I was a 14-year-old with a bad attitude. But I remember on about day two, it occurred to me, you know, it's not all that bad. There was different candy, different pop. There was one-armed bandits in the hotel lobbies. I remember, wow, I can gamble down here. I distinctly remember statuesque German women with hairy armpits. It was just a wonderland. And I thought, this world's an interesting place. And I remember that year I was in with relatives in Norway watching Neil Armstrong take the first step on the moon. And I heard "One Small Step for Mankind" so on in Norwegian. And I just thought, oh, this world is just celebrating this all together. And it was just really a beautiful thing for my parents to have had the opportunity to get me out of my country. And I was having so much fun traveling with them. I thought, well, as soon as I graduate from high school, I'm going to go back to Europe every year on my own. And I have. At first, I was a piano teacher, and kids wouldn't practice in the summer, so I thought, I'm not going to fight with this. I'll see you in September. I'm going to Europe. And I was traveling on a very tight budget, and I was learning from my mistakes. And what was really clear is I was becoming a pretty good traveler, and other people were making the same mistakes I made the year before. It was uncanny, exactly the same stupid mistakes I just learned from. And I thought, if I could just package the lessons I've learned from my experience into a talk or a book, or I wasn't even thinking TV and radio back then, other people could learn from my mistakes rather than their own and travel smoother, and I would have a great excuse to go back to Europe every year and update my material. So I've been doing that ever since I was a kid. Now I've got 100 people that work with me here at Rick Steves Europe in Seattle, and I've got technology beyond my wildest dreams to you know, do our guidebooks and run our website and make our apps and produce our TV show and our radio show for public broadcasting. And I'm just really thankful. I just love this work. I found my niche. I never... Every year I come back, I'm sort of more enthused about going back again next year and gathering more information and designing it so we Americans can have the best possible travels.
Rick, did you ever think that what you were doing would turn into the kind of venture that you just described?
No, I had no plans at all on that. I didn't have any plans to do anything but sort of fashion a way where I could continue to travel. And originally I was taking little minibus tours around Europe. And it was just me and 8 people on a minibus, and we had no reservations or itinerary. It was just sort of a communal thing. We'd share the cost of the minibus, and we'd come into some town, and I'd park. It'd be like 5 o'clock after a busy day of exploring around, and I'd say, okay, everybody scatter and try to find hotel rooms for us, and we'll meet back here and compare notes. And since then, I've found that there's a real niche for me organizing tours, and that's the biggest part of our business is our tour program. This year, we took 20,000 Americans to Europe on 800 tours, 30 different itineraries, and boy, that's just so much fun, and I get to work with these guides in Europe. When people see my TV show, it seems like I've got friends everywhere in Europe, but, you know, these are just local guides. I'm hiring them to be my friends. Anybody can do that, and that's what a private guide's all about, and they're, I send them a lot of business through my guidebooks and so on, and when we come in with our public television TV crew, they're happy to, you know, join us and help us make the best possible show to share back home.
A good guide can make all the difference, can't they?
Oh, you know, that's something it took me a long time to realize because I'm just so naturally frugal. I just come out of a backpacking heritage, and I thought, you know, this is, like, really expensive, $100 for a private guide for half a day. And now I realize, oh, man, if you can afford it, it is the best value. It's a luxury. Just last year, I jumped ship on a cruise in Northern Europe. I jumped ship in St. Petersburg in Russia, because I wanted to stay there longer. And I was in St. Petersburg for 5 days, and on four of those days, every day I had a different local guide, and it made all the difference in the world. When I got off that ship, it was scary to be in St. Petersburg, not knowing what was where. But with local guides, everything becomes friendly. And the good news is that the more valuable the guide is when you travel in Europe, the less expensive it is. You don't need a guide in London, where they're really unaffordable. They're so expensive in London. But when you go to, you know, Prague or Istanbul or Morocco or Russia, or I just made a show in Palestine, having a local guide there is really quite cheap. They're university-educated, English-speaking people, often with their own car, and they're half the price of a guide in Germany or London, and really double the value.
Now, is it fair to say that your experience with travel has taught you to look at travel as more than just travel? In other words, what's the value of travel, not just to the individual, mm-hmm. but to the world as a whole?
Yeah, I've gone through an evolution that way as a teacher. I didn't have any grand plan, that's for sure. But if I look back over 30 years of traveling, it's interesting. It's kind of like Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You remember that pyramid where mm-hmm. first we cover our basic needs, and then you get more creative and more self-fulfilled and actually altruistic at the top or whatever. And when I think back in the 1980s, it was all about European travel cheap. That was the name of my class at the Experimental College at the University of Washington. And I wrote a book called Europe Through the Back Door, which is now we're talking about that is out in its 30th edition. But back then it was just all the cheap tricks. And all I talked about was, you know, all the budget tricks in the 1980s. And then in the 90s, it occurred to me, okay, you know, you've got your train pass and you got your hotel and a good restaurant and you know how to stay healthy and safe. Why do you go to Europe? And that's to experience and appreciate and enjoy the art and the culture and the wine and the cuisine and the history. So I wrote a book called Europe 101, History and Art for Travelers. And that was my passion in teaching. And then the next decade, since about 9/11, 9/12, the day after 9/11, it occurred to me, you know, what we need to do is travel and better understand the other 96% of humanity. And to me, that's the pinnacle of this Maslow's hierarchy of travel needs, to get out of our comfort zone, to hang out with people who find different truths to be self-evident and God-given, and to realize that, you know, the only thing exceptional about the United States really is our ability to think that we're exceptional. And there's 96% of humanity out there, and we got to get to know them, whether we, you know, and it's just a celebration of diversity on this planet. And my passion for the last decade has been to remind Americans that the best souvenir we can bring home is a broader perspective. And then I wrote a book called Travel as a Political Act, and, you know, people who enjoy public broadcasting might know about my TV shows on Iran, or my newest one is on Palestine and Israel and the Holy Land. And we just like to get Americans out of their comfort zone and talking with people who see things differently. We'll come home probably more thankful than ever that we're Americans and we live in such a wonderful country. But at the same time, we become more comfortable with the rest of the world and a little less susceptible to hysterical news on the commercial networks that really has morphed recently from news into entertainment masquerading as news. And that's a sad sort of thing in our country these days, is I think a lot of us are very fearful. I remember when I started traveling, people said, bon voyage, and now people say, you know, safe travels. What's with that? It's safer now to travel than it used to be. When people were saying bon voyage, it's just there's 24/7 news that has to be goosed up and sexed up and bloodied up so that we watch it all the time, and there's enough eyeballs to help them make a profit when all the dust is settled with their advertisers. And the sad consequence of that is it tends to make Americans a little more frightened, and I think that's not a good way for our society to be going.
You mentioned the trip to Iran. How did that go?
I had the greatest time in Iran, and most of my favorite travels are when I go to a place where at first I'm a little bit nervous and frightened, and then I realize when I get there that my fears were unfounded. When I was in Iran, I encountered the friendliest welcome I've ever encountered as I've been making my TV show. And, you know, we had people on the streets that were just bending over backwards to help us. And it was awkward because above us we had 10-story tall hateful banners that would say, you know, propaganda banners on the walls of the buildings that would say, down with America or death to America. But those banners are older than the people I met on the street. And, you know, they've got a complicated situation, and they've got a fear-mongering government that is a theocracy that for important reasons is very worried about incursions from the West because they grew up under the Shah. And I remember having a woman come across the street, and she sort of pounded her finger on my chest and said, "Are you an American journalist?" And I said, "Yes." And she says, "I want you to go home and tell the truth. We're strong, we're united, and we just don't want our little girls to be raised like Britney Spears." And you know, it was very thought-provoking to me. And I thought, you know, people in Iran are really afraid of regime change, not because of the cost of oil, but because they have their own values and they are worried that their little girls will be, you know, kidnapped by mass pop culture and become boy toys and drug addicts and crass materialists. I mean, if you look at Miley Cyrus today, that's reasonable understanding for somebody that doesn't understand what pop culture is all about. And that's something that's really powerful to deal with in a people-to-people way. They've got their baggage. We've got our baggage. Of course, we've got 9/11 baggage. And in Iran, they've got Iran-Iraq war baggage, where they lost 300,000 people when they were invaded by an America-funded Saddam Hussein. And every town in Iran's got a vast martyrs cemetery, which is as lively with mourners today as it was back in the 1980s when those graves were fresh. And to see a woman weeping on the tomb of her lost husband or son or father, as she has every Friday for 25 years, that's a powerful, powerful thing to see. And as a traveler, you know, I can see that. Much more recently, I was just in Israel and in Palestine. And, you know, Americans have a very tough time understanding what is the risk from a travel point of view. And I'll tell you, I felt very comfortable traveling in the West Bank in Palestine. I'd go there tomorrow if I had a chance. And what I learned is you could bike from the place. If you had a bicycle, you could go from where Jesus was born to where Jesus was crucified in half an hour, except that there's a big wall right now between Bethlehem and Jerusalem, and the people who live in Bethlehem generally can't go to Jerusalem, and the people who live in Jerusalem generally can't go to Bethlehem. But if you're a tourist, you go right through that wall, right through the checkpoint with nobody even checking your passport. It's a very interesting world, and when you travel there, you understand the unintended consequence of that wall is to keep the younger generation saddled with only their parents' baggage, with no opportunity to talk to each other on either side of that wall. And these are some issues that are kind of heavy, kind of exhilarating, and very interesting for us to deal with when we travel. And the sad thing for me is many Americans go all the way to Israel, and they go to Jerusalem. They make a beeline into Bethlehem to go to Nativity Square to see that, you know, church where Jesus was supposed to be born, and then back onto their bus and scamper back into Israel and breathe a sigh of relief that they didn't get kidnapped or something like that. And that is just so... I would go as far as to say it's ridiculously fearful if you had a chance to spend a night in Bethlehem and get to know the people that live on that side of the wall as well as the other side.
One of the thank you gifts we're offering during this winter fun drive is the Rick Steves Travel Package. It has the 2015 edition of Europe Through the Back Door, a travel skills handbook, 11 new shows on DVD, Best Destinations Travel Newsletter, and a bonus DVD with all kinds of practical travel information. The Rick Steves Travel Package is available for a contribution of $150, or if you start at $12.50 a month sustaining membership at 419-7155 or wvxu.org or wmub.org. And these are always popular and they go very quickly, so if you'd like to get that Rick Steves Travel Package, don't wait. Make that phone call to 513-419-7155. And Rick, one of the sections in Europe Through the Back Door is about books, films, and TV for travelers. Really neat stuff. How did that come about?
Well, you know, a big part of our work is taking groups to Europe. As I mentioned, we took, 800 groups around Europe on 30 different itineraries last year. And we like to encourage people to prepare for their trip by shaping their recreational movie-going and reading to help them better understand the country they're going to visit. Before I went to Israel, I watched a lot of documentaries. You can just, search them any way you get your videos and check that out. I was recently in Estonia. And I'll tell you, I'd been to Estonia several times before I realized there was a movie called The Singing Revolution. And watching that movie about how the people of Estonia, who are 1 million people, a charming, delightful, fragile little society, you know, wedged between massive Russia and massive Germany for centuries, and how they have survived, and they're hopelessly outgunned, but they let the world know they exist by singing. And to see how the singing spirit of Estonia helped bring down the Soviet Union is an amazing story, but you wouldn't know about that unless you watched the movie, the documentary called The Singing Revolution. So these are little tips that we like to give people to get the most out of their travels, and wherever you're traveling, you can bone up on that, and we like to help people, and that's one of the chapters in this 700-page Europe Through the Back Door book that people will receive when they help support public broadcasting in your town.
What's been your favorite travel experience, Rick?
My favorite travel experience, well, every year I spend April and May in the Mediterranean. I go home in June, and then I go back for July and August north of the Alps. I think my favorite travel experience is the wonder of going home, like, for the 30th summer in a row after a two-month trip and realizing there's more of Europe I still want to experience. It's a lifetime challenge of mine to better understand Europe. On my last trip, I flew home from Gdansk in Poland, and I just was just blown away about how exciting Poland was, and it hardly registers on most Americans' travel dreams. We can never exhaust Europe of what it has to offer, and your challenge is to make those magic moments. I was just researching my guidebook in the Cinque Terre, the Italian Riviera, and after a long day of checking out all the hikes and then the towns and the train schedules and then in the evening the restaurants, I was pretty exhausted. I was filled with all sorts of scraps and notes and everything. I'm heading back to the hotel. It's about 11 o'clock. And then I notice all the chefs are out on the harbor, sitting there with a glass of whatever wine they like to drink and a cigarette and just enjoying the peacefulness after a hard day of work in their restaurant. And I thought, boy, here's a hardworking community, and we travelers can go in there and enjoy the fruits of all their labor and connect with that culture. And then all of us celebrate a job well done and a vacation day well spent as the sun goes down.
Rick, we've got less than a minute here before we have to let you go. What suggestions do you have quickly for someone who's just starting out traveling?
Well, I think you've got to realize that in the United States, we have the shortest vacations in the rich world. We're always concerned about the strength of our dollar. By the way, the dollar is stronger now against the euro than it has been for ages. I think we're 20% up on the euro from a year ago. It's set down to like $1.15. We want to use our money smartly, but we also want to use our time smartly. We have the shortest vacations in the rich world. And there's a lot of crowds, a lot of lines. I think there's two IQs of European travelers, those who wait in lines and those who don't wait in lines. If you're waiting in line, you're messing up. You need to look at the guidebook as like a $20 tool for a $3,000 experience and equip yourself with good information. Expect yourself to travel smart, and you won't wait in those lines. You'll understand the scams that await you. You'll know that in so many ways, the less you spend, the more you experience. And you'll also understand how people carbonates a good travel experience. If I'm leading a tour around Europe or making a TV show for public television or writing a guidebook, if I'm not connecting my American travelers with people running restaurants, people running little bed and breakfasts and guest houses, people in the pubs, then the trip is, the experience is going to be flat.
Rick,
the mark of a good traveler is how they connect with the people.
Rick, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you. Happy travels.
Rick Steves, you can hear his show Saturday afternoons at 2 on 91.7 WVXU.